The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. And I'm sorry to say, I couldn't get on the schedule of anyone to do it or this month. And so I'm going to ask you all in the listening audience to help me. If any of you are veterans or you know anybody who are veterans, we've had one blind veteran on before, and that was very enjoyable. It was a while back. So I'm going to ask you if you know someone who would like to be interviewed on Salute a Veteran Every Day to give us a call here at the North Carolina Reading Service at 919-832-5138. And we'll give you that number again at the end of this program. So today I'm going to read to you from Air and Space Forces magazine. And this is the magazine that used to be Air Force magazine, but since the Space Force came around, it's now Air and Space Forces. And I've been getting this for, about 40 years or more. More than 40 years. Here's an editorial. In the news, you've probably heard about people who have misuse their clearance over secret or higher material. So this is an editorial called Youth and Consequences. Americans discovered in April that hundreds of pages of secret documents had been posted on Discord, a voice and chat platform favored by the gaming community, and later spread to the wider World Wide Web. Within days, authorities tracked down and arrested 21-year-old Air National Guard Airman First Class Jack Teixeira. I probably messed up that name. For allegedly abusing his top-secret SCI security clearance by copying and distributing documents on the web. How is it, the public wondered, that our military trusts people so young with secrets so large? Is it wise to entrust those under 25 with national secrets when Hertz and Alamo won't even rent them a car? The case is reminiscent of that of Chelsea Manning, who as a 23-year-old soldier was arrested in 2010 for giving hundreds of thousands of secret documents to WikiLeaks. Initially sentenced to 35 years in prison, Manning's sentence was commuted in 2017 in what remains a profoundly baffling decision. Both cases involve very junior service members whose access to secret files was compromised despite oaths of office, non-disclosure agreements, and extensive training. Both made use of the Internet to share a volume of data that would have been all but impossible prior to the digital age. The fact is, the military could not function if it didn't trust volunteers in their teens and early 20s with security clearances. Indeed, the vast majority earn and deserve that trust. Just under 3 million individuals held some kind of U.S. security clearance as of October 2019, according to a redacted report from the National Counterintelligence and Security Center. Another 1.3 million were cleared but were not actually accessing classified material at the time. Even if 99.99% of those cleared individuals could be trusted, 430 risky people would remain. Some might be foolish and sloppy, others criminally culpable. Either way, leaks are inevitable. Conventional measures for mitigating that risk focus on foreign connections, debt troubles, addiction, and lifestyle choices that could make someone subject to blackmail. Eliminate those most risk, disappear. But it's harder to nail down psychological factors that may arise well into adulthood, or the poor judgment that comes from a less than fully developed brain. Science tells us the frontal lobe isn't fully developed in men until they're 25 or so. In 2021 RAND study, updating personnel vetting and security clearance guidelines for future generations, notes that today's young people not only grew up in a different world than their parents and grandparents, but that their attitudes, choices, and lifestyles are vastly different as well. That suggests continued changes to the way we clear people and monitor them over time must likewise evolve. Clearance investigations examine 13 factors: allegiance to the United States, foreign influence, foreign preferences, sexual behavior, personal conduct, financial matters, alcohol consumption, drug and substance use, and abuse, psychological conditions, criminal conduct, past handling of protected information, outside activities, and the use of technology. It's the last of these that demand more attention and study. Though there is no public database to show which of these factors is most likely to sink a clearance request, it is clear which factors are the cause of cases that get appealed. Most common are financial matters, personal conduct, and foreign influence, RAND reports. Use of information technology is among the least common. That suggests such cases are either rarely disputed, which seems unlikely, or that investigators make few denials for digital activity. Ours is a trust but verify system, the thin line between reasonable security and invasion of privacy is easily breached. The digital profile of gamers sharing screenshots and gaming advice is not so different from that same gamer leaking classified documents. The only way to tell the difference is to see exactly what is being posted. This is the biggest difference between our free society and the oppressive regimes of China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. We draw a sharp line around the personal freedoms. They summarily ignore them. Every member of the military swears to uphold and protect our Constitution, which not only spells out our First Amendment freedoms, religious liberty, free speech, a free press, the right to assemble, and the right to petition our government for the redress of grievances, but also protects against unreasonable search and seizure and self-incrimination. Military members effectively surrender some rights when they take their oaths, but not these. Younger generations are more likely to have immigrant parents than their parents did, or to have moved here themselves. They are more likely to have overseas contacts, more likely to have experimented with drug use, and are more open to unconventional relationships. They are less judging of homosexual and non-monogamous relationships. Yet the biggest difference between the 1980s and today is the ubiquity of digital technology. For digital natives born in the 1990s and later, computers, social media, and digital sharing have always been there. What's surprising in RAND's observation is that 88% of 18 to 29-year-olds use some form of social media, is that the figure isn't greater. We found younger adults are the most active on social media, and how much information they share online appears to be on the rise, Rand reported. This generation also relatively blasé about security, as evidenced by the vast popularity of apps like TikTok. Rand recommended new guidelines to broadly address the personal conduct that individuals may exhibit online, including the timing, frequency, and context of problematic conduct by clearance applicants. That's a start. Efforts to require what might amount to digital strip searches of every service member in exchange for clearance would violate the definition of unreasonable search and the nature of our system of trust. It's on the government to verify and monitor that trust. One of the prices of freedom is risk. Granting individuals some benefit of the doubt, we hold their human rights. We uphold their human rights. To ensure compliance, violators must be held to account. America must trust our young. The vast majority of those who raise their right hand honor their oath and deserve that trust. Those who don't must be held accountable as an example to all. And again, that was an editorial by Tobias Nagel, titled Youth and Consequences, and it is in the May 2023 edition of Air and Space magazine. If you're just joining us, we don't have a veteran to salute today, so I'm reading from some military articles. If you know someone who was a veteran, and by the way, a lot of people don't know their veterans. If they served at all, a week, a month, a year, they are a veteran, and we would like to have anyone who would like to be interviewed and would like to share what they did while they were on active duty. Now I'm going to read from the Letters Department. Goodreads is the title here, and this is from Major Daryl Hayes, USAF, Bellevue, Nebraska, and I'm pretty sure I know Daryl from my days in the Air Force. As a Vietnam War era vet, I read with great interest the article in April, page 54, by Colonel Mellinger. I'm probably chopping that name too, M-E-I-L-I-N-G-E-R. On the books every airman should read to understand America's lost war in Southeast Asia. I don't have any of those he mentioned in my library, but I intend to check my local library to see if they do. That all said, however, I was disappointed that he did not include what I feel to be one of the best first-hand accounts of why America failed in Vietnam. A bright and shining lie, John Paul Vann and America in Vietnam, by Neil Sheehan. At nearly 800 pages and small print covering the entirety of most every page, it is a challenge to read, but it explains very well what apparently were the issues and problems in our loss of so many military men and women, as well as thousands of civilians in this long, drawn-out conflict. Covering hundreds of locations in country and hundreds of interviews with people actually involved, it accounts for so much that they may not, that they may have not been known to the general American populace. It was a war we could have won, but failed to, the blame going to the military leadership or lack thereof. I highly recommend anyone interested in a bottom line read this book for a deep understanding of our involvement in Vietnam. As usual, here's another one. As usual, I enjoyed reading through the March 2023 issue. I particularly enjoyed Dwight S. Muir's article on honorary promotions. However, I was surprised and disappointed that he did not include General Benjamin O. Davis as a subject in his article. Graduating in 1936, he was the first black cadet graduated from West Point since 1889. Lieutenant General Davis, commander of the Tuskegee Airmen during World War II, retired on February 1, 1970. He was awarded a fourth honorary star, which was pinned by the president, on December 9, 1998. His biography should be read by everyone. An American hero's story of overcoming tremendous adversity his entire life and achieving success as an Air Force leader. That was written by Captain Phil Bachman, U.S. Air Force, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Here's another letter titled, Take Command. Two things are equally dangerous and equally disturbing in military operations. Not shooting when you should, and shooting when you don't know what you're shooting at. Both can equally cost the lives of U.S. forces, civilians, and allies. Both always undermine the trust and confidence the American people put in our military leadership. This was on full display in January and February 2023 when our military leadership, NORAD, NORTHCOM, and the White House took no action when a Chinese spy balloon traversed Alaska, Canada, and the central part of the United States, as recounted in the article, Concerns Over China Reach New Heights, in the March 2023 edition of Air and Space magazine. Not only were numerous national security sites exposed to risk, the failed decisions of our military leaders were on full display. While no one was killed, national security secrets were put at risk, and the trust and confidence of the American people was undermined because no one knew when to shoot. What the article does not mention is the decision to shoot down three other objects. The Pentagon stated they did not want to use the term balloon. When the same leaders fully admitted that neither they nor the pilots were fully sure what they were shooting at. Even though they did not positively identify the targets, in their zeal to not repeat the Chinese balloon experience, they shot anyway. Today, these objects have not been recovered. The date the Pentagon has not stated, the Pentagon has not stated exactly what they shot down. Unfortunately, we've seen this before from the same Pentagon and White House leadership. On August 26, 2021, at the height of the Afghanistan withdrawal, U.S. forces providing overwatch security at the gate of the Kabul airport had eyes on a suicide bomber. According to Sergeant Tyler Vargas Andrews' testimony before Congress on March 8, 2023, the security team had intel that a suicide bomber was imminent. The intel including a detailed description of the bomber. Sergeant Vargas Andrews testified from the intel he PID'd, that is, positively identified, the bomber. He reached out to his team leader who confirmed the PID. They requested permission to shoot only to be told by their commander that he did not have engagement authority and did not know who had engagement authority. Minutes later, the suicide bomber detonated. Because the leadership did not role play when to shoot, 13 Americans were killed and another 45 wounded, including Sergeant Vargas Andrews, and 170 Afghans were killed. 3 days later, on August 29, 2021, in their zeal to not allow another suicide bomber access the Kabul airport, CENTCOM, that's short for Central Command, and the Pentagon authorized an over-the-horizon strike on a target, in quotes, they suspected was a bomber heading to the Kabul airport. In the immediate aftermath, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, with the Secretary of Defense at his side, called the strike righteous. But within hours, it became clear that they did not know what they shot at. The strike killed 10 civilians, including an aid worker and 7 children, and further undermined the trust and confidence of the American people and our allies and our military leadership. The disturbing part of, quote, balloon gate is the pattern that continues to highlight poor decision-making of our Pentagon and White House military leaders. They do not know when to shoot and when not to shoot. And to date, no one has been held accountable. Their decisions continue to undermine the trust and confidence of the American people. And they ask us to trust them with Ukraine. This is written by Colonel Seth Bretschier, U.S. Air Force, Lafayette, Indiana. Civilians might be surprised at how much we sort of criticize our leaders, but it's good and healthy. People are encouraged to speak up. Here's a page called Verbatim, and it shows some airmen out on the flight line talking. How do you inform Russia? Well, we won't write them a letter. I think they get the message when we deploy. And that's a quote from Chief of German Air Force, Lieutenant General Ingo Gerhardt, speaking about NATO's Air Defender exercise to reporters at Joint Base Andrews, Maryland. Here's a picture of a F-35, I think. Rare air. If we lose the battle for the skies, the consequences of Ukraine will be very serious. This is not the time to procrastinate. F-16s would solve many of our issues in protecting the airspace, and it is available in sufficient numbers to make a difference. So says Colonel Yuri Inhot, spokesman for the Ukrainian Air Force, commenting on the need for U.S.-made F-16 fighters for air-to-air defense against Russian air sorties. That was in the Wall Street Journal, April 10. Satellite blitz. I'm not worried about any physical threats to the satellites themselves. The way we get around that is by proliferation, so we'll have hundreds and hundreds of these satellites up there. It will cost more to shoot down a single satellite than it costs to build and launch that satellite. We just completely changed that value equation. That was Space Development Agency Director Derek M. Tournier discussing potential threats to the agency's satellites in orbit after their first launch in April. Looks are deceiving. If we accept that the A-10s are not part of the high-end fight, and you accept that F-15Cs are not really a part of the China flight anyway, we actually have a net gain in procurement. We actually increase by 12 the number of airplanes that will be part of the future fight. So I think there's a story here that the effect is not as negative as is being portrayed. That's a quote from Lieutenant General Richard Moore, Air Force Deputy Chief of Staff for Plans and Programs at a Mitchell Institute for Aerospace Studies event. Cloud landing. I fundamentally believe that we will get ahead much quicker if we don't try to dig ourselves out of tech debt, but we just leap over that and move to software-defined everything and modern systems that keep evolving over time. That's a quote from Space Force Chief Information and Technology Officer Lisa Costa on why the Space Force shouldn't waste time and money fixing outdated computer systems, but should instead start fresh in the cloud. Okay. Hug it out. There's a picture of an airman checking out underneath a aircraft. There's special things you do whenever a plane leaves. With the MC-130H, I used to give it a big hug on the nose and tell it goodbye and keep my friends safe. I did that every single time. Staff Sergeant Kevin Rutukowski, in an event commemorating the retirement of the Air Force's last MC-130H combat Talon. On call. Picture of an airman looking at his, I don't know if it's his phone or a military phone. You take your cell phone, I guess it's cell phone, you take your cell phone anywhere in the world, and we'd like you to take C2 anywhere in the world, any way you want to get there. Major Padden Allen, head of the 422nd Test and Evaluation Squadron's Tactical Command and Control Division, discussing ways to match C2 with distributed operations. He's at Nellis Air Force Base, Nevada. Under strategy and policy, this headline, new F-35 engines. You can't always get what you want, to quote the Rolling Stones. Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall clearly regrets that the service isn't pursuing an advanced technology engine for the F-35, a move announced with the fiscal 2024 budget. His hand was forced both by the multi-billion-dollar development price tag and the recognition that while U.S. Air Force is the largest operator of the fighter, it's only one among many F-35 users worldwide. Partners at home and abroad weren't willing to help fund the project, and the new logistics train needed to support it. The decision was seen as a blow to the defense industrial base at a time when Congress is becoming increasingly alarmed about its capacity to surge production in the event of war. The provision of huge numbers of munitions to Ukraine, with no quick way to replace them due to long lead times, has highlighted the fact that Pentagon suppliers are one deep for many critical items with limited production capability. I've been reading snippets from Air and Space Forces magazine, and I hope you've enjoyed that. It's been a little different for our Salute a Veteran program. As I said at the beginning, we are looking for more veterans to come in and join us here and talk about their experiences in the military. You can call us at 919-832-5138. We're going to head on out here and hope you enjoy the music on the outgo. We've run out of time for this edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 832-5138. And if you know anybody who would like to join us, have them call 919-832-5138. I'm Frank Urban for the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time.